This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:06 with Kelvin, Iman and Cam, and we are talking today about the value of the art sector and how it can be supported. This is after Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad said that art students deserve the same benefits as science students since the creative industry is a major contributor to the country's economy.
According to Tun M, arts and culture reflect a civilization's identity and is important for societal development. And because of that, the achievements, the quality and the facilities for artistic endeavours have become the sort of a benchmark internationally on the country's development. And he pointed out that developed nations place a great importance on encouraging the arts, for example, through formal training.
Now, last year, the digital creative industry had sales of up to 7.69 billion ringgit with exports of 1.4 billion ringgit. And it's also provided around 11,000 job opportunities. So I guess that kind of just shows the scale, the kind of scale which the creative industry contributes to the economy.
Mm. Well, it sounds rosy, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. If these figures are correct, and who knows with figures, then, you know, it sounds encouraging, but it could be so much more. I've been in the creative arts my entire working life, and when I told people about what Tun Mahathir said recently, all the same response, which was, really? Yeah. He said that? No one's ever said that before. And then a shrug of the shoulders, knowing full well that nothing's going to come of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, you know, because there's just this feeling in this country that arts funding, spending money on arts is elitist. And
sometimes even seen as sort of frivolous spending.
And frivolous.
Yeah.
And for those people who say that, I got two words.
Oh.
Which is South Korea.
Okay.
Because South Korea, a while back, I think about the time that democracy came back to South Korea, made a decision to send people off to study cinema, to study music, both pop and classical, theater, dance, you name it, everything. They went off there to study these things. The government gave students full funding to go off and study those things and then come back.
Yeah.
Now, I'm old enough to remember a time when there was nothing to remember about South Korea.
Yeah, you've seen the before and after of the Hallyu wave.
I mean, South Korea was what? It was shipbuilding, a few cars.
Yeah.
No one cared. Now, South Korea is the dominant cultural powerhouse in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because, one, they put the effort and the money into it. And why did they do that? Was it just for fun? For elitist, middle-class, frivolous fun? Well, no. I mean, one, the people at home do deserve these things. But also, really importantly, is that the products that South Korea makes, the brands that they have, now have cultural cachet.
Mm-hmm.
Because before, a Samsung phone, it's just a phone, it's just a thing. But now, when you buy a Samsung phone or a Hyundai car, you are buying into that entire cultural package. And that's one of the reasons why Malaysian brands, we don't really have any brands, can't really grow internationally, because they have nothing to hook onto. There's really nothing for a foreigner to think about, except for, well, we put a lot of time and effort into this Visit Malaysia Year stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the best we're hoping for is, once again, is for affirmation from tourists who will come here, pat us on the head and say, you're nice people. But they're not going to have, we should be a cultural powerhouse. And then our products, the name of this country would be associated with something more than just nice people.
Yeah, and probably more than the practical value of it, right? I think the appeal of the durian is because it's such a unique fruit, but it doesn't have the necessary cultural ties South Korean products might have. And I think it also says a lot, right, that perhaps you can say this, but you really got to put your money where your mouth is, right? The arts didn't, I'm not sure if they actually, I don't think the arts industry had received a single cent this time from the budget.
It has.
And it's usually under the tourism and arts and culture budget, or under like the communications and multimedia ministry.
And they were quite proud to announce that they've actually spent some money this time. They've given 5 million ringgit to an organization called Gendana. Mm-hmm. They've also given 10 million to Think City. So 5 million ringgit, that's like a big thing, plus some tax breaks if you sponsor. 5 million ringgit. You know, I'm the last person to sing the praises of Singapore, but goddammit, I'm going to do it right now. The Singapore National Arts Council has a budget in equivalent ringgit terms of about 380 million ringgit.
Right.
So our budget is 5 million. There's nothing you can do with 5 million.
Yeah.
Now, you go down to Singapore. Meanwhile, not only do they have a thriving arts industry, which employs people, it means that a young person can viably think about having a career as an actor, as a theater director, mm-hmm. as a lighting director.
Museum curator.
A museum curator. And people then go to Singapore. They think of Singapore as being this place, which I think a lot of the product is problematic. But nonetheless, it's there. And they have buildings that house arts and entertainment. So even if you're a Singaporean who never partakes in any of the culture there, you don't go to the museums, you don't go to the theater, you've never watched a Singaporean movie, nothing. Even then, you would walk through Singapore and you'd feel certain that you're experiencing, it's a 360 experience. Mm. That your place is having a desire, an aspiration. Tun Mahathir, a while ago, also said, Vision 2020, that in the year 2020, we'll be a fully developed nation. What does it mean to be developed if you have no culture? Mm. And Indonesians seriously look down upon us. They think of us as a country with no culture. And you go to Indonesia and you're instantly struck by the sense of culture. One last thing I'm going to say, because I've been ranting for too long. Malaysia is the 25th largest economy in the world.
Yeah.
That's not a small thing. We are actually an elite. Or if not elite, we aspire to be one.
Yeah.
We're close to being. So we've got to start thinking and looking and acting like one. Instead of just being an elite class who says, we don't need culture because I've got a house in London. I'm going to go over there, watch Phantom of the Opera, get my entertainment, come back. You lot, I don't know, go watch YouTube.
But I guess it is the fact that you want to be more than that, right? You want to not only be content consumers, but you want people to be content creators as well.
We have such talent here.
We do. We do.
We do.
And, you know, I think there is the simplest, most relatable way I can sort of think about this and the fact that we have an underappreciation of the arts is that, you know, even in secondary schools, in primary schools right now, it sort of sits secondary, it has secondary status next to STEM subjects. Teachers in general that teach art, or pendidikan seni aren't art teachers in general. They are more generalists, they don't have an art degree or whatever, you know, and that's why the stuff that you get from them isn't necessarily like the most comprehensive. You don't actually get an art education in school. I think my first true art lecturer, my first true art teacher was in university when I happened to take that as an elective. And the experience there was much different than what I took in high school and primary school.
And I remember back when I was about to go to uni to do my film degree, I was looking for scholarships or some kind of sponsorship. Somebody that would help fund my studies in the arts, in filmmaking. It was very difficult to find one. There was only can count with one hand. There was Astro and The Star, and those were probably the two main ones. But otherwise, I found that support for a degree in the arts is very hard to find, especially financial support. And I can imagine how that might inhibit some students from pursuing their passion or their dreams of being a creative artist or a person in the creative industry. So, I mean, the fact that Tun M is saying that we need more support for arts, I think that's a good thing.
Yes.
And I hope he follows through with it, with actual actions on it.
I really hope so too, because we have a lot of very wealthy people in this country, and we also have a lot of companies, both multinational and local, who are sitting on lots of money, who they actually have to spend this money, some of it. And they do not spend it on the arts because of the two things I said before. It's considered to be frivolous and it's considered to be elitist. Mm-hmm. And also they do not spend money on the arts because the government doesn't get involved. Because right. a lot of they are too scared. They are too scared to be seen to dare to take a step against the government. If the government's not spending on arts, well, I better not. In Singapore, oh my God, I'm going to say it again, but it's not just Singapore that does this. They set aside 70 million Sing to match your contribution. If you give 10,000, they match 10,000. If you give 1 million, they match 1 million. So if you are a theater company,
yeah,
or a dance company, or traditional dance, whatever, you go out there and you start soliciting, going around trying to get raise sponsorship. If you get somebody to say they're going to give you 1 million, you've got 2 million. And if the government's going in, then the rich people and companies will dare take that step as well. But so far, we've always shown that we have a complete disdain for it. We think people in this country are basically, they're all still working in tin mines. And
quite machine-like.
Machine-like. That is the impression we get. You eat, work, sleep. Eat, work, sleep. Repeat. Mm. Ad infinite until you're dead. There's nothing. I was so angry this weekend. There was nothing to do. Nothing. There's nothing out there. And the few things that are done by private companies, theater companies or little museums or whatever. They're all private. Government has spent nothing, and it's got a budget of what? 5 million. The Philippines has a bigger budget, and they've slashed it under the authoritarian Duterte, because that's what authoritarians do. We've had supposedly democratic governments throughout our entire lifetime, and we've never spent anything.
Well, you can let us know your thoughts on how can we, I guess, better appreciate the arts, and you know, your thoughts on how we've so far underappreciated it. Send us your thoughts, 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we will be speaking to Joe Kukatas, Artistic Director of the Instant Cafe Theatre. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:20, and we have been talking about this statement from Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, who wants art students to get, that they deserve the same benefits as science students, since the creative industry is a major contributor to a country's economy. So you can keep your thoughts coming. You know, how can we better appreciate the arts? Do we appreciate the arts? 7733-2900 is the number to call. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. On the line now is Joe Kukatas, Artistic Director of the Instant Theatre, Instant Cafe Theatre Company. Thank you, Cam, to share her thoughts with us. Joe, thank you so much for being with us on the show. How do you feel hearing this statement from Tun M that art students should get the same benefits as science students?
Well, of course, it's a very positive statement, so I feel very happy to hear that. Yeah.
So you've worked on theatre productions in other countries like Singapore, Germany, Japan. What's the support like in other countries for the arts industry? And would the arts and culture there thrive without this support?
Well, I think, you know, even the word industry is an interesting one. If you look at Germany or Japan, for example, they're very old countries, and they never saw the arts as an industry. They just saw the arts as a necessity. So the arts were very much part of life and part of, you know, something that ought to be supported because it was necessary for the humanity of society to have the arts. So if you, for example, in Germany, when they talk about the arts, they see the arts as a basic citizen's right, you know, as much as you have the right to having good roads or good public works, you have the right to have good art and accessible art and affordable art as well.
And over here, we're still looking at it pretty much through an economic lens. How do you feel about that?
I think the economic lens is, I think, overused here. I think it's, of course, it's sometimes I think we think of art only in these sort of utilitarian terms that we can't explain its purpose unless we see it having some sort of economic benefit. And there's nothing wrong with looking at it as having an economic benefit, but if you only support the arts because you think there'll be a direct economic benefit, then I think you might be disappointed. Because I think the benefit is something which is long-term. The benefit is something which is in some ways intangible. It creates people who are more empathetic, more thinking, more wide-ranging in their ways of processing. It creates people with higher IQ than just simple EQ rather than simple IQ. So the benefits are many and not necessarily always readable in simple economic digits.
So if you really want to still look at it through the economic perspective, what do you think is the economic contribution of arts and culture in Malaysia?
Well, I think, you know, you can see in other countries that the arts have definitely contributed to the economy. People go to the UK to watch the arts. People go to Singapore to watch the arts. Indonesia's got a huge, thriving international art scene. But I still think maybe it's the wrong question to ask, you know. And I think the better question to ask is, how do the arts contribute? And I think I'd say this because I think that in the past, when we looked at how can the arts contribute to the economy, when it's something fledgling, maybe it's a premature question to ask. So, for example, when we have an art scene, you have to ask, how does it contribute to the economy? But first, you have to ask, well, how has it been supported in order to contribute to the economy? So if you have sport, it's very supported and it contributes. If you have a car industry, it's supported, or an airline, aviation industry. These are things which don't contribute back to the country economically in a very clear way. But if, as the Prime Minister said, you know, the arts are a manifestation of our identity, then perhaps we should believe that that is the contribution, that what it contributes is a sense of self, a sense of country, a sense of being. I think those are kind of very important contributions. And I think if you have such a strong society, then I think that you will notice that there will be definitely an economic adjunct and an economic benefit to those skills that you get from having a strong art sector.
And on the subject of arts and culture being a manifestation of our identity, does the Malaysian art and culture scene reflect the Malaysian identity?
I think it doesn't fully reflect it yet. I think because I think it's a very small arts scene. I think that I remember somebody saying many years ago that we're a very well-kept secret. We have a lot of potential. I mean, we have people here from all over the world. We've had people come here with their own very strong cultural heritage, and there is those separate identities and separate cultural heritage, but it's also people mixing their heritage, creating new cultures, new forms, new hybrids of art. And I think that that's a very exciting possibility, which I think hasn't completely been tapped into yet. If you look at our food has influences from all over the world, and we just quite happily, you know, layer influence upon influence upon influence, and it becomes very distinctive. You can say for sure, this is Malaysian food. But is there something we could look at and say, this is Malaysian art, this is Malaysian theatre, this is Malaysian literature? And it's not a weakness to say no, because I think maybe we can tap into something much more global and much more hybrid in its identity.
So if you could have it your way, what are some forms of support that you'd like to see being extended to the arts and culture scene here in Malaysia?
Well, I think the most important support, actually, I mean, is statements like what the Prime Minister has just made to say that it's important. And, you know, I think there's always been this unfortunate exercise of streaming students, you know, and if you're regarded as clever, you were told whether you're clever, you can go into the science stream. And there was always sort of disparagement of people who went into the arts. So I think it's a very important step to say the role of the artist is also as significant as the role of the technologist or the scientist. And I think, for me, that's a great step forward. And if that can then translate into other people acknowledging that, you know, in different sectors, the corporate sector wanting to also support that, government sector also wanting to support that in a bigger way, I think that would be, that's a really big step and a big way forward, I think. And I think the other thing that we definitely need is that we definitely need more policies to encourage the arts, put arts back into school, put performing arts back into school, put visual arts back into school. I think really the way forward is to acknowledge that we have all these different cultures, and rather than thinking, well, these are so many different cultures, how can we possibly put them into school practice, to actually find a place for all these different art practices to be taught in school.
So there's still the idea that the arts are often not a practical pathway for students if you're looking for financial and career stability. Joe, what are your thoughts? Is there any truth, do you think, to that?
Well, I think it's whether or not you think the only purpose of art is to then give you a career in the arts, rather than thinking of the arts as being something that gives you a career and practically anything you like. So you find there are many people who've studied the arts and who go into all kinds of different areas because, as I said, it helps build understanding of ways of thinking, ways of processing information, which is different from scientific inquiry, but also equally valuable. And I think that if you think of the arts in schools as being useful in that way, then that's why I would say we need art in schools. Not everybody will necessarily become an artist, but they will use what they learned from the practice of making art, the practice of learning dance, or the practice of learning performing drama, or the act of writing literature. All these things give you other kind of skills which you can use in any job, I think, in the future. But for those who do say they want to, you know, have a career in the arts, yeah, I would say for sure it's not an easy one. Nowhere in the world is it easy to be an artist. But if that's what you want to be, then you know that's you just have to have that determination.
Jill, thanks so much for speaking with us this evening. That was Jill Kukatas, Artistic Director of the Instant Cafe Theatre Company. You can send in your thoughts. What do you think about the arts industry here in Malaysia? How can it be improved? 7733 2900 is the number to call. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
Business, finance and music. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:37. You are with Kelvin, Ayman and Cam on the evening edition. Now, before we move on to our next story, you know, earlier in the hour, we were discussing the value of the arts sector and I guess how it can be supported. This is after Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad said that art stream students deserve the same benefits as science stream students. And I guess we've just got on to talking about how we sort of undervalue and underappreciate the arts sector here. We've been asking for your thoughts. You can keep them coming in. Do you think we undervalue our arts industry? Do we undervalue our artists here? And how can we support them? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We have this first message here on WhatsApp from Ung that says, bravo, Cam, bravo! Finally, someone has said the tough things that we don't like to hear, but have to accept. Culture does have value and the arts needs funds and support. Your take on South Korea and Singapore says a lot on what we should aspire for. And I guess along that same line, Adam on Twitter says, just spent a week in Singapore. I visited parks, museums, watched free rock concerts by the bay on the weekends, listened to piano in the hotel. Haven't done that in the last 5 years since we came back to Malaysia.
Oh, you know, it hurts to hear people saying such great things about Singapore. And I don't want to encourage this kind of talk. But, you know, at the same time, they have been spending a lot of money and they have a commitment to it because they understand the importance that it imbues a country's brand and gives entertainment to the people. And we have not. So we're not even in the game.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times when we say, oh, Singapore, this, we're not even in the game. We could be. It's not that hard. We could actually follow the template that they've set out with their National Arts Council. We just follow the same thing. We don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. Well, I guess in this case, I'm not sure if this is necessarily a fair thing to say, but this is an issue where you can literally throw money at it and it'll grow, I think.
You're damn right. Seriously, you're damn right. 100 million, bang, on, you know, cash.
Channel properly, given properly.
Yeah, through a National Arts Council, there will be mistakes. Mm-hmm. This is a brand new thing. There'll be mistakes and there'll be many productions which are terrible. And then there will be some that'll be great. But there are so many areas that we've never ever touched. We do not have, for instance, a National Youth Theatre.
Yeah. Hmm.
Why do we not have, for instance, a youth theatre company in Kuantan? just for example, mm-hmm. the state capital of Pahang doesn't have a youth theatre company. It probably doesn't even have a theatre. There may not even be a theatre on the whole of the East Coast. I don't know. Why has there never, for instance, been a big Tamil language theatre production? Mm. A musical, say. Mm. There's never been one. Because the Tamil language is always at the bottom of the pile. Why has there never been a night, a gala night, when people can dress up their best, go to a grand opening of a Tamil language play? And the technology is so easy. We can have surtitles. So it can be translated into Malay and English or whatever, and everyone can partake. We've never had that. It doesn't cost a fortune.
I just wonder if perhaps, you know, that undervaluation sort of goes both ways, right? Where perhaps the perception that because it is elitist, because it is seen as frivolous, and because that translates to perhaps very little in terms of policy in appreciating the arts, that also comes across from the ground level, right? In some cases, because, well, this production is way too expensive for me. I'm not going to spend money on that because that seems like an extra frivolous thing that I have to spend on as a consumer.
But it involves the livelihood of people. There are actual people involved to bring, you know, like make a production come to life. We're in theatre or TV or whatever. And so if you underappreciate the value of the arts, you're actually underappreciating the value of that person's life. Because if you don't support them financially, then it affects their livelihood. And I mean, judging from my experience in the TV industry, right, the budget for TV productions hasn't changed in like 20 years. Ever since 20 years ago, right until now, it's been the same amount. At the same time, the cost of fuel and food has gone up. And what that means is that the productions have to cut corners. And that affects the quality of the work.
Yeah.
That affects how much you can pay your workers. And that also affects the sort of like working hours as well. Because time equals money, the less time you spend on something, the more money you save. And that means that people have to work long hours to make something come to life. And that applies to the theatre as well.
Yeah, and in TV productions, because I've worked in many TV productions as well, you've also probably, there's a good chance of someone skimming off the top as well. So the budget that you've actually, that you're talking about, it actually goes down again. Mm-hmm. And so what you'll find is you have a lot of people who are working on there who are young. Because when you get to a certain age and you start getting on new responsibilities in life, you realise, I just can't do this anymore.
It's not sustainable.
Not sustainable. And you get out. Mm. So you don't have older actors. Oh, they're really hard to find. They're really hard to find. And also you just get a cycle of poor quality in that the audience become accustomed to poor quality.
Yeah.
And if you never break that cycle, you'll get away with it. But then sometimes something does come through. And recently we've been having a number of Malaysian movies coming through with just really good quality where they have put in the money. I watched Pascal the other day. Mm-hmm. It's really good. Budget of 10 million. It's made back 30 million at the box office alone. Technically, magnificently good filmmaking. And once people have seen that, when they see The Promised Land like that, you break the mold. And yet you go back to TV. It's not all rubbish. There are some highlights, but TV could be such a strong and important entertainment force here. And you talk about elitist. My key word always is entertainment. Mm-hmm. I would like to create entertainment.
Yeah.
Now, entertainment is, you know, it's a laugh. It's for your brain. It's for your eyes, your ears. It's everything. But I'm not saying that everyone should go and we're going to spend it all on a huge Samuel Beckett production in English, but we're actually going to make it in like Middle English from the 1500s. I'm not saying anything like that. No, we make entertainment so that, like I say, children in, say, Pahang can enjoy themselves making art and not be denigrated for it and feel they're doing something frivolous.
You know, I think overall there's also a general sense and desire for more arts things to do. I think when we saw over a few months ago, when I think that the Da Vinci collection happened in the Balai Seni Visual, there was so much attention and desire to just go, even though it wasn't the actual paintings, but it was just you know, just a digital posting of it.
You went and saw that, and you can probably feel the energy in that room.
There's a lot of like, ooh, ahs, you know, and wanting to just be part of that.
Wanting to be part of that, just so desperate for something. And that was thanks to the Italian government.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know?
And like, even if you go to Istana Budaya shows, right, it's always full. Like, there are people actually watching it. So there is the appetite for more artistic pursuits and creative products in the country. So with more support for the industry, especially if Tun M follows through with his ideas, then it can lead to good results.
You can keep your thoughts coming. We are talking about the arts industry here. How can we better support it? Are we supporting it? 7733 2900 is the number to call. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll get back to some of those messages after this. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:47. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Kelvin, Ayman and Cam, and we are talking about the arts sector. This is after Tun M said that both art students as well as science students, they deserve the same benefits. This is a little bit revolutionary, if anything. You can keep your thoughts coming. 7733 2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We have this message here from Kim, who says that the elites who decide the policies in the country have no appreciation of culture for Malaysia. I recently visited China. They are so proud of their identities. When you go to Chengdu, their mascot is panda. When the officials exchange gifts with overseas officials, they give their locally produced products such as Baijiu, and Kim goes on to list a whole other bunch of examples. They're fantastic. So there are tons to do and so much to talk about wherever you go, the tea culture, the dancers and so on. What do we have to shout about in Malaysia to tourists? Malaysians are nice people. We speak many languages. Well, everyone is a little bit and not quite perfect. We have good street food. The country won't recognize and promote cultures and quality of everything when it's so-so. How to take pride of anything here? Our museums, our national library that has leaking roofs, our traffic jam. If we can't get over ourselves and recognize the true history of the nation, we will never progress. At the end of the day, Malaysia is the potato below Thailand and above Singapore.
It's controversial.
It's got to take that girl's passport away.
Cam.
No. You know, nail on the head yourself there. What can I say? You mentioned the museums, and actually, if you do go to the museums, we had this chat on Evening Edition several months ago.
Yeah,
and you will find tourists going there because it's the sort of thing you do when you're a tourist. You go to a museum, and you'll find, generally speaking, more tourists than otherwise. And some of the museums, I'm thinking of Museum Negara. It's a bit head scratching, but there are some nice things in there. Mm. And if it was put together better, but it's I went to the police museum. Did you know there's a police museum?
Yeah, it's Lake Garden.
And I remember I it was just me, and I came, and I think these two Japanese tourists came kind of like stumbling out afterwards. They're just scratching their heads, going, "What did I just see? Why is there a museum for the police?" Mm. I actually found it fascinating because I'm a Malaysian.
Yeah, they actually built like a whole like village, like Melaka village, with like all the what it looked like back then, with the roles of the Laksamana and whatnot. It's a very interesting museum.
It is, as a Malaysian, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. And the reason why I mentioned South Korea earlier is because we have received much South Korean culture product, but there's a lot of stuff which only they have. And the brilliant Bong Joon-ho, the filmmaker, who is, to my mind, the best filmmaker in the world at the moment, he was saying of his movie Parasite that, you know, he thought he was making a South Korean film, specific just for South Koreans. But he says he gets a lot of comments from outsiders.
Yeah.
And it turns out that we all live in the same country, and that country is called capitalism. Mm. You can make universal stories if you aim for the specific, but it needs funding, and he got it.
So you're saying that if, like, the police museum, right, if two Japanese tourists don't get what it is about or why it exists, So if we create museums that have themes or stories that can resonate with a global audience, do you think that's the way to go rather than focus on here's the history of Malaysian police? There you go.
We need each of these would need to have to the client there would be the police. Right. I mean, if you're setting it up, the client's the police, and so they dictate. But then you also need to have an eye from outside. Mm-hmm. And if you have, say, a National Arts Council, that it would take in its in part of its purview would be, you know, museums. And you give it an external eye and say, well, wait a second, who is this really talking to? Mm-hmm. What story is it telling that's a benefit to a local and a foreign audience? What's the, you know... and how can we best tell it so that it's graphic and entertaining and exciting and it's using the best of the newest technology and affordably and that kind of thing? Because it's a great spot.
Yeah.
Up next, we have a message from JC that says, talking of arts and culture, we really lack culture. Every ethnic culture is slowly dying off, except for some, especially in the East. Look at Alena Murang. Not many know of her. Plus, 5 million ringgit a budget is small, but it could be a start, but only if we start exposing the beauty of art that relates to life, culture, attraction, and it turns into an economic potential and benefit. To be fair, many artsy production houses tend to also... misspend the money given to grow the industry by spending for unrelated stuff other than R&D, marketing, exposure. We need to start noticing really creative people that we just turn a blind eye to. We also have this message here from Anwar that says, creative products are for elitists. How can one spend to get entertained if bread and butter issues are not solved? How to laugh if you have to do odd jobs to support the ever-increasing cost of living 24/7? One can't enjoy paintings in museums if you need to do food panda around the clock. Only those with money have money and time to spare.
Well, that's the argument, isn't it? It's a valid argument. It's a valid argument. The thing is, though, that the fight against poverty, the fight to reduce poverty, defeat poverty, to create healthcare for all, education for all, these are going to be ongoing forever. Mm-hmm. You're never going to win the fight against poverty. No country in the world ever wins their fights against poverty. So the problem with that argument is that it means we have to defer it to a later date. Now, I said earlier that we're the 25th largest economy in the world and we aspire to go further. When is that date?
Yeah.
Because we're never going to cross that threshold. And I don't think it's entirely true to say, though, that you can't laugh if life is against you. You know, if life is against you, yes, and we should be working to help. And the gig industry, et cetera, I mean, it's not good. But I don't really take the argument that we always have to fight. If we can succeed the fight against poverty, then we can have arts.
And like for those who have an appetite for the arts, but find themselves in a situation where maybe they can't pay for a 14 ringgit ticket and all that, there are opportunities to still appreciate art at a low price as well. There are a ton of museums that are free or like 2 ringgit, and there are art galleries as well that you can access for free, such as the Balai Seni Lukis Negara. But it's just that I find that a lot of the museums, for example, that are free or very cheap, the things that are in there just aren't very up to standard, I would say. It's just because like they don't get that kind of funding to rehabilitate their exhibitions or get in new things. It's probably the same thing that's been there for like years and years and years already.
Sure, yeah. We've got to refresh things.
We have to refresh things. And yeah. But because these museums, the admission to the museums are free or like 2 ringgit, they won't have that money unless there is either government investment in it or maybe private investment in it from corporations.
Well, on that note, I guess we have this one from Sarah that says, Balai Seni Visual Museums and Bank Negara Galleries are both free and much livelier exhibits than the Da Vinci one, but it's always empty. That might be a few factors, right? Perhaps one being that sometimes they don't refresh the galleries as often enough, or the offerings aren't as exciting. But
I'm not dismissing the galleries you've just mentioned.
No, definitely not.
They're good. They're good. And a lot of the things that we're talking, that you're pointing to are sometimes private galleries. I think private has done the best it can, the Islamic Arts Museum, for instance. But there's a limit that private alone can go, or private alone plus underfunding can go. And we hit that limit 20 years ago. And now we're just on existing on fumes. We're just treading water here, mixing metaphors.
And like the Balai Seni Lukis, they've got some pretty interesting things there, and they always refresh the gallery, the things that they show there. It's just that compared to the when they brought in the Da Vinci artwork, right? It's Da Vinci. He has name recognition. Whereas on normal days, when you have local artists exhibiting their artwork there, obviously they're not as well known as Da Vinci, and maybe that probably is why not many people, like, you know, seek to go there, just because they're not really familiar with what's on show.
Yeah, well, we do actually have a very lively fine art scene. And with a lot of investors in that. So it's, I've got some big names there, actually.
I guess we have these two messages. They are sort of lying with each other. First up from Chelsea that says, we are never taught to appreciate the beauty of art, not with middle schools cutting art lessons for math lessons. Michael, on the other hand, says, we didn't get here by accident. It was long decided ago that someone that art and culture was distracting a group of people from striving into professions like law, medicine, and teaching. So now we have to deal with people who have lost their identities.
Very good point there, Michael. And I think that the jobs that you've mentioned there are actually ones that are now under threat from automation. Is that a word?
Automation.
And also, you know, have lost their identities. This is just another thing that I feared. So I would ask you, of you two here and people out there, our listeners as well, have you as Malaysians, have you seen Wayang Kulit? Have you heard gamelan in the flesh in your own? Have you been to visit gamelan? Have you seen Chinese opera? Indian classical dance. I mean, Indian classical dance we can find. They're the very good ones in KL. Menorah, Matyong. Have you seen these things? And have the people, I'm going to ask people out there as well, these things that make up our culture. And if you try to get them from, say, the East Coast, and you just bring them here, one small troop to bring them here, the chances are, one, it'll cost a lot of money, and two, you will not make a profit. Because if you want to actually present it in the way that it should be presented, it costs money. And you cannot turn a profit. No matter how, if you can fill that theater, you got to fill it 50 times over before you can make a profit.
You can keep your thoughts coming on the arts industry. Are we undervaluing them? How do we appreciate it better? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.